In this episode, you'll find out why mobile and video solve business problems and the types of ways that I use video to amplify my business goals.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery. Brought to you by Wirebuzz.
What is up? All right, let's get started. Can we start off with a pop quiz? You ready for that? Let's just get right down to it. Here we go. All right. And I want you, wherever you are, to come up with an answer. There's really no right or wrong answer if you're by yourself listening to this podcast. What percentage of video plays occurred on mobile devices in Q3 of 2017? What percentage of video plays happened on mobile devices in Q3 of 2017? You want to venture a guess? It's actually really impressive. Okay, get your guess, lock it in. It is locked in. Final answer, right? Okay, good. Final answer. 58% of video plays occurred on mobile devices in Q3 of 2017. That comes directly from Uyala. And I want to give you a tip. Let's just start right off. You know, this is a news episode. And with all news episodes, what I try to do is not only tell you the news that's happening in digital marketing, but also lift the veil and show you the way my brain thinks, all right? I look at news and then extrapolate it over into client projects. Or if I'm talking about a new strategy or a tactic that's in the news, or maybe Coca-Cola did something awesome, or Skittles is rocking Instagram, I'm going to explain it. And then I'm going to explain how your business could learn from this. All right. So let's get back to this mobile views of videos. And my tip is, before you finalize on a video, proof it on a smartphone. Seriously, because that's the native environment. That's the real environment that most people will see it on. And if you just said to yourself, nah, Todd, that's not that big of a deal, you are living in a different era. If in your mind you're thinking, well, I'll just look at it on my computer and I'll proof it. I'll look at the at it on my laptop. It'll be fine. I'm good. All right, Todd, I don't need your silly little tip. You know, when I got started with Wirebuzz, mobile views were about 16%. Now, 58% of all video plays, right? That's a 300% growth, man. And mobile's only going to grow larger. And the reason is what I call the one device life, which is coming soon to a back pocket near you. You see, once we hit the one device life, you're not lugging around a laptop, or you're not going to the office and sitting down at your desktop and working and then going home and grabbing your laptop or your iPad, all of that. And I actually was expecting to see, and you know, in past episodes, I've talked about the one device life because I'm trying to get you into the next phase. The sooner you get to the next phase, the sooner you can be there before your competitors, all right? There's a huge advantage there, but only for those that seize those golden opportunities. A one-device life is what I thought Apple 10 was going to be. A phone with enough power, enough memory, to plug into any monitor that you have. So all you're traveling with is your one device, and it goes with you everywhere. The smartphone killed the camera, didn't it? Bang, bang, you're dead. You used to carry two things. We would carry a phone and a camera. And then, oh, and also a computer and all these other things, an iPod. But the phone, the smartphone, killed all of those. It just kind of gobbled them up and then put them inside of its body. And the same's going to happen with your laptop and your desktop. You're going to have a monitor when you go to a hotel and you're going to plug in. You're going to have a monitor at your desk and plug in, and one at home. Or maybe it's your existing devices that are already there, but everything's going to sync via the cloud, but it's also going to go with you wherever you go through your one device in the back pocket as you roll. And I want you to be prepared for that, especially when 58% of all video views are coming in on mobile devices. Stop everything you're doing with video, proof every video on a mobile device. And I know that means you've got to export it and you've got to view it on a mobile device. And I just added another step, but boo-hoo, that's exactly how your customers are going to be looking at the content. Be prepared for it. Make sure that the lower third where your name appears and your title is big enough for somebody to see on their mobile device. Make sure that when you're proofing it, that the dimensions are right for the mobile device. Make sure that you've got any buttons or anything you're going to click on or any call to action text or maybe animation or text on screen are all designed primarily for a mobile device first. Why primarily? 58% of all views are happening on mobile devices. Be prepared for it and don't go kicking and screaming. Most bad marketers, and you'll know by identifying yourself, go kicking and screaming to the next thing. Even in the face of 58% of all video views are happening on mobile devices, they go kicking and screaming. The best marketers are the ones that arrive with an open heart and open arms, right? Whatever tomorrow brings, you should be there with an open heart and open arms if you want to be on an accelerated marketing curve. You know, I've been getting really great audience interactions with many of you. And I hope you know how much I enjoy that. It totally makes my day hearing your feedback. And I'm committed to growing at fast rates. And often that means I have to hear things that I may not normally want to. But an accelerated learning curve is what I crave. So criticism that's polite is super valuable to me. And over the history of this podcast, I've been making it very clear that the reason most businesses fail with video is that video creators do not know how to create a video marketing strategy. And it's really a digital marketing strategy that the videos live in, all right? And I understand that that's a missing piece for video creators that want to compete for new projects and to grow their existing clientele. You know, there's a reason why I've never lost a client. They know they can't go anywhere else because 99% of video creators are TV guys. They're like TV production people that moonlight on the side or kids with camera or wedding videographers. And none of them live, eat, and breathe successful online conversions, right? How do you convert somebody from a viewer to being a customer? How do you do that online? And by the way, if I offend you in saying that, I don't mean to. If you are a video creator that's coming from television or maybe you've done some type of commercial stuff or weddings, I'm not trying to put you down. I'm trying to expose that there is a greater opportunity for your talent, right? And with every new opportunity comes growth. I've got a sticker at the side of my desk. It's a post-it note, and it says, it has an acronym on it, and the acronym is ASS, A-S-S. Agitate, strain, stress. You got to go through agitation, you got to go through strain, and you've got to go through stress. Those three things, it feels like ass when you're going through it, but those three things are what you go through each and every time before you choose to break through and evolve. The acronym ASS has a line underneath it, and then it has in big words, evolution. And anytime I'm feeling agitation, strain, or stress, I have to remind myself that this is my choice, how long I want to feel that ass. And once I decide that I'm done with it, then I evolve and I take the next steps, but often I sit in it for too long, like a dirty diaper, and the choice is yours. If you're feeling like you're agitated or you've got some strain or stress around where the digital landscape is going and how to incorporate video into it, it is your opportunity to jump feet forward and start learning, all right? And so I like to spend time talking about that. And I know that I've done that over the past episode, and there's a reason why I keep bringing it up. And I know that many of you are emailing me wanting to know more about digital strategy. And it's an interesting concept for video creators with a traditional television or, you know, wedding videography background, but it comes second nature to me at this point. And I hear what many of you are asking. You're asking me to teach it, right? And I'm not really sure how to teach it right now. It sounds strange, right? I'm not really sure how to teach it because it comes natural to me. I've been skiing since I was 3 years old, and I was a ski tour guide for many years. And I remember taking one of my best friends up on a hill and me saying to him the night before, dude, I'll just teach you how to ski, right? And we got on the hill and I didn't even know how to teach how to stand up after you fall or how to fall, because all those things just come intuitively to me. But I promised to give it some thought and to share with you the most important elements in 2018. I think this is an opportunity for me to grow an audience. I think it's an opportunity for you to grow skills that'll make you more valuable inside of the digital landscape. And as I was starting to write this out, I started thinking about the first digital marketing strategy I ever created. I don't think I've ever told you about it. For some reason, I'm kind of embarrassed to tell you about this. It goes back quite a ways. And as a kid, my lifelong dream was to be a talk show host. You know, I grew up in Los Angeles, had the influence of the greatest radio voices of all time, Vin Scully with the Dodgers, Brooklyn and LA, Chick Hearn with the Lakers, Minneapolis and Los Angeles, and truly the greatest storytellers of all time. Now, before I go any further, I want to thank you for allowing me to exercise the passion that I have with this podcast. You know, when I left the radio, KFYI and KTAR, and turned off the microphone, a little piece of me got left behind. And I get to do this each week with you. And it's a real labor of love. That's how much I enjoy it. It's probably the most fun I have all week. And when I was in college at the great University of Arizona, I developed a talk show idea, a concept. And 3 years after graduating, my radio show made it to the number one station in the fifth biggest city in the country in Phoenix, Arizona. So what was my show? Well, the show was eventually named Deal With It. And I interviewed experts who presented their own solutions to the biggest problems of the week. Why? Because I recognized a problem with talk radio and with television news and politics. Everybody complains and whines and nobody solves it. And at the core of who I am, I'm a problem solver. That's really what I do with clients. They bring me their problems. I solve them with, you know, whatever it might be. That might be my best quality in the office. When employees bring me problems, I solve it. And at home or in family life, right? And if a listener on my show Deal With It liked one of the solutions presented on the show, because anybody that came on my show had to present a solution. And it was a solution to the biggest problems that people were talking about that week. And if you didn't present a solution, well, I'd kick you off the show or I wouldn't have you in the first place. And there were plenty of times where I went out for a cocktail with a buddy who was a press secretary for a United States congressman. And he would say, well, when are you going to have my boss on? And I would say, well, what solutions are your boss working on? He'd go, no, Todd. I'm looking for a place where I can schedule my boss. Somebody can lob him up some softballs. He can hit some home runs, win-win all around. And I said, you know, I don't know if this is the right show for your boss, right? If a listener liked one of the solutions presented on the show, they could go to the show's website and select the expert that they agreed with, select their solution, enter their zip code at home, and click send. And the solution that they supported from the radio show would get sent directly to their elected representatives, local, state, and federal. And when I was on the radio, my digital strategy and how I executed that could get over 150,000 action letters per show. And by the way, this idea doesn't sound that groundbreaking, does it? Hope you're saying that to yourself right now, you sitting there in 2017. But I'm not talking about 2017. I did this 20 years ago, before the end of the world. You know what I'm talking about, the Y2K bug. Before the end of the world, Y2K, 150,000 action letters per show. It was so groundbreaking that TV executives had zero idea what I was talking about when I was pitching the show to them. Integrating the internet directly into a television program blew their mind. Couldn't get around it. On November 10th, 2000, I was at the front door of the Fox News Channel. Check this out. In New York City. And I was there to pitch my show Deal With It. I was invited by Bill Schein, the former Fox News Channel co-president, that Bill Schein, and also was there at MSNBC and CNN took a four-month exclusive on my show concept. And after they just sat on the pot and didn't make anything happen, I pulled the rights to that program. And after an overnight on a flight cross-country, when I went to go meet Bill Schein, and I walked up to the front door of the Fox News building, and right when I was about to touch the door handle, Bill Schein called my cell phone to cancel the meeting. So why do I remember November 10th, 2000? Why that date? Because the Bush-Gore election just happened a couple of days before, and we wouldn't have a president-elect. We wouldn't know who won that election for another 33 days, where I would be a Clear Channel reporter down on location, a talk show host and reporter in Tallahassee covering the recount. So when I walked up to the front door of the Fox News Channel and Bill Schein called my phone to cancel, I told him, "Hey, Bill, I'm already in your lobby. I'm an early bird. And I just flew across the country for this meeting." And for anybody that's married, there's nothing scarier. It's going in a meeting with the head of Fox or MSNBC or CNN or any of the alphabet soups is not as scary as calling your wife and saying, "Yes, I just spent $1,000, flew across the country, and some Bill Schein at Fox News just canceled," right? Can't do that. So reluctantly, I pushed my way into a meeting, and he said, "Todd, I've only got 15 minutes, man, before I have to fly to Tallahassee to get involved in the silly recount." And so I pushed my way in, and I pitched him, and that dude had zero clue what I was talking about. To Bill Schein from Fox News, I was from the future. Could have been wearing tinfoil or some aluminum suit. He wasn't even asking me questions that were connected to what I was talking about. I struggled to visually show him, even though I had screenshots, of how the internet integrates with television, right? And he didn't get it. He said something like, "You know, man, I don't know. I mean, I just don't see people wanting to use the internet like that in real time to interact with the show. I don't see people being interested in that, Todd." Now, to his defense, this was 2000. I'm from the future. He told me that Rupert Murdoch doesn't even believe in the internet. He told me that in that meeting. My head and my eyes opened up. I couldn't believe it, right? Now, he was about to take off on an airplane, in his defense, to go and talk dimpled and pregnant and hanging chads for the next 33 days until a president was announced. I was from the future, but that's always been my problem. I can't tell you how much time I spend pulling clients and prospects to where the next big opportunity is. Leaders often spend more time pulling than leading, and I've always found it to be a bit frustrating. The idea was solid, but the digital marketing strategy was even better because I was building a huge friggin' database of followers. Now, in hindsight, I should have never stopped building that database, right? If you got 150,000 people each week that are sending off action letters, you're building a database of people you can market to. But 20 years ago, in the onset of the digital age, before the Big Bang, before each person started specializing in different subspecialties of the internet, the concept of followers and database growth wasn't even fully realized for maybe another 7 years. And eventually I fell out of love with my show concept. And then I fell in love with Phoenix News. And many of you know that story. When I launched Phoenix News, I studied SEO and content marketing. And before I knew it, the website was going crazy viral and a career was born. And I'm still from the future. I get it. In my present moment, I use video the following ways, which most businesses will be using in the future. Of course, I use it on my website. I use it across social because I know people are 4 times more likely to watch a video, 3 times more likely to share it than any other type of content. And for those reasons also, I use it in my sales context. When I'm selling, I'm using video. When somebody is about to meet me, I send them my explainer video. After that meeting, I follow up with questions that are relevant to them and answers in video that we talked about in the meeting that I'm going to reinforce with video. I also use it for education and for thought leadership. If you're following me on LinkedIn or on Twitter, you're getting a ton of content that may or may not appear in this podcast, but I make sure that that information is out there and it's fresh and it's relevant. And often I'm filming wherever I go. You know, one of the next episodes, I don't know if it comes before or comes after this one, but last night we recorded in the car, a podcast episode going to a video shoot. Me, I'm the client. We're filming my sizzle reel. You're going to want to hear that. It's pretty damn cool. I take you along. Audio quality isn't as good as the Wirebuzz studio, but good enough for you to learn and to hear about our equipment and what our goals were and how we strategized to execute properly when we got on location. By the way, I'm scheduled to be in Copenhagen, Denmark, Stockholm, Sweden, Grand Rapids, Michigan, and Carlsbad over the next 7 to 10 days. You know, I just picked up a new client, huge company. I think I overheard someone on their team saying something to me that they've got 55,000 employees, and I'm dyslexic. So it was either 55,000 employees or 5,500. I can confirm right now that I know it had a five in it, right? And well, as Wirebuzz has grown, the company doesn't allow me to do shoots anymore. There's just too much going on. I've got too much thought leadership and speaking opportunities. And we create so many videos now. I've been using the same number from last year, and I'm about to get a new number. But last year we created, 1,000 videos, client videos a year. And about 3 years ago, the team pulled me aside and said, you know, you're a lot more valuable to the company, man, if you don't go on these shoots. That's kind of rough. They don't want me around. But there was something more valuable for me to be doing, like this, and meeting with clients and developing strategies and speaking. And when I started Wirebuzz in 2010, I was the sales team. I was the camera guy, the digital marketer, the SEO social media whiz, like you get on a Tony's or Gino's in Philly, if you know what I mean. And I was also the video editor, straight up. I paid my dues, but I really like my clients. I really enjoy making friends with them, hitting home runs together, finding out what really unique custom thing they need to accomplish, and then how we use the power of the internet and the power of targeting on social media and video to be able to engage their frontal lobe and to pull them through a buyer's journey. I love that. I really do. And, you know, the best work I do is client facing. That's where I'm my happiest. And I'm excited to be producing a project as we bounce to each one of these cities. I loved being on set yesterday, filming my highlight, my speaker sizzle reel for 2018. And it's just cool. I'm looking forward to being on a shoot. The last time I was on a shoot, we won a Telly Award. Last time I ran a camera, I just mic dropped, walked off stage, right? It's pretty cool. Telly Award given by the people who run the Emmys and the Oscars. It's hot shit, right? We told one hell of a powerful customer testimonial story. And when you come visit me here at this office here at Wirebuzz, that Telly Award on my desk is what you'll see when we're talking. And now that I'm coming out of filming retirement to direct a shoot, it's all downhill from Telly, man. I thought I was walking off the stage, mic dropping like John Elway with a trophy. But no, I'm back and probably better than ever. And while traveling to all of these cities, hopscotching around the world, I'm going to do a lot of video marketing reading, and I'll make sure to share that directly with you. And one of my primary goals is to help you learn in 2018 how to create your own video strategy and your own digital marketing strategy and wrap the video in to the power of the digital technologies. It's pretty cool. We're going to have a lot of fun in 2018. And the strange thing is, a lot of people in my family tell me I shouldn't be giving it away for free, but I don't feel like I am because I know and you know that this information is valuable. I literally see you sharing the information each and every time, and I'm grateful for that. So with that said, let's get down to the latest news that matters to video marketing masters. Ready for another pop quiz? In the US, blank number of ad agencies believe that video ads are a more effective way of advertising than TV or other forms of marketing. Let me do this one again, because you have to answer this. In the US, blank, that's, you're going to fill in that, right? When I say blank, blank number of ad agencies believe that internet video ads are more effective than TV and other forms of marketing. What percentage of ad agencies in the US believe that video ads are more effective online than television? The answer is 70%. Oh, them times they are a-changing. And TechCrunch reports Instagram has been steadily beefing up its direct messaging feature in recent months as it has begun to toy with the idea of spinning out messages in its own separate app. And among its more recent tweaks was last month's added option for photo and video message replays. And earlier enhancements like support for web links and different photo orientations. Today, it also rolls out another change. Users can now privately send video over direct messaging. Now, this includes your own live video, the company says, or you can share a live video you're currently watching with friends or groups. By the way, everything I'm talking about in this episode will be on the show notes page, wirebuzz.com/133. Facebook now has a built-in screen sharing functionality. Somebody out there recently asked me about this on a podcast episode, and I answered it. And then sure enough, The Verge is reporting Facebook added the ability to directly share your screen on Facebook Live. If you click share screen, a prompt will follow asking to install the Facebook screen sharing extension to your browser. You can get access to this how-to step guide on the show notes page, wirebuzz.com/133. Hey, TechCrunch just crushed it. Couple of stories. Apple is expanding its social media outreach. The company has just launched a new YouTube channel to teach people how to use the Apple devices like iPhone and iPad and video tutorials. The first set of videos focuses on common and fairly simple tasks like screenshots, which I do all the time, adding attachments to email, deleting photos, and changing the wallpaper, and much, much more. Check this out. Why are they doing this? Why is Apple taking its frequently asked questions and most common problems and putting them into video? For the same reason my clients are doing it, because it's cheaper to create the videos once, then have 50 people a day gobble up the time from each person at the Genius Bar or anybody that calls into Apple or chats about the same damn question every day that gets answered over and over again. And if they just create the video once, then the people who are answering the questions just have to say, when somebody calls in or it's a chat functionality, Apple only has to say, oh, here's a link to where we answered this question. If this video doesn't help you solve your problem, reach out to us and Apple will save themselves time. In a past episode, I told you about one of our clients that uses videos instead of having their most expensive employees, their PhD level scientists, answering questions that are coming in from other scientists. So instead of burning their most expensive employees' time, we created videos for them, and their least expensive employee who answers the phone, the operator, directs all of the scientists with a link via email to where they could watch that answer. Cha-ching, that's money being saved. You should be thinking the same for your clients. Now, maybe the best thing that Apple's doing with their video library is they're going to cut their overhead by following this strategy. The second problem that Apple is solving is one of the most common problems that businesses haven't identified yet. Customer service in the digital age is different now more than ever. Human to human support is super valuable, but we're also seeing huge customer trends towards not interacting with another person. Let me give you an example. Did you know that 18% of buyers want to talk to a salesperson before they're ready to make a purchase? Only 18%. That means you flip that on its head. 82% of people want nothing to do with a salesperson until they're ready to open up their wallet. Now, right now, smart businesses are building their entire sales process into their website by having different videos for each of the stages or lessons that a new customer needs in order to make a purchase decision. So when Apple is building a video library for their frequently asked support questions, what they're really doing is showing new customers that they have the support tools available for everyone who doesn't want to sit on hold or go into the Apple store for a Genius Bar appointment. That's genius, right? So what about your business? DM me your biggest business problems. I bet you can solve many of them using the power of video. Good friend of the podcast, Barry Schwartz, reported in Search Engine Land, Google confirmed that they have extended the search results snippets from 160 characters all the way to a maximum 320 characters. Google said that even though the snippets can be longer, the fundamentals of writing a description tag has not changed. Google may or may not show 320 characters. Google may or may not show your meta description. Google may or may not show content from your page. A lot of how Google decides what search results snippets to show is based on the search's query and the content on your page, a Google spokesperson told Barry Schwartz. Now, Barry says, in Schwartz, if you're happy with the way your meta description show to your searchers, then leave them. But if not, you can try changing them. Either way, meta descriptions do not play a role in search rankings, but they do play a role in what searchers see in Google search results and can have an impact on your click-through rates from Google search results. All right? Show notes page if you want to get more on that. Our friend Barry Schwartz went on another article. Google has posted on the Webmaster blog more advice around getting ready for mobile-first index. I've been telling you that it's coming. And then think back to the beginning of this episode, the pop quiz. What percentage of video views happened on a mobile device in Q3 of 2017? Answer, 58%. So Google already knows that a vast majority of their searches are coming from mobile devices. So them times they are changing, right? So Google is already bracing for mobile first as being its priority. Your business should be going where Google is going. And Google confirmed its rollout to the mobile first index for a handful of sites and said that the search team is closely monitoring those sites for testing purposes. Now, you'll know when your site moved over by checking to see a significant increase in crawling rates by the smartphone Google bot in your log files and the snippets in the results, as well as the content on the Google cache pages will be from mobile version of your website. Again, Google said only a small number of sites have been migrated, but Gary, and Gary's last name, I'm going to botch. Gary is basically Google's new Matt Cutts. He's like the voice of Google search and Google spam. And Gary's last name is a foreign last name, and only a few select people really know how to pronounce it, like our friend Mark Traphagen, who's told me it several times, and each time it goes in one ear and out the other. So I'm going to botch Gary's last name, and you're going to laugh at me while I do it. Gary Ilias, which I'm sure is not the way it's pronounced, from Google posted several tips to getting ready for the mobile first index. And if you want to hear directly from Gary, whose last name I can't pronounce, just go to the show notes page for this episode, wirebuzz.com/33. And on that same page, I'll post my recent interview with Gary Schwartz, the big Google search reporter, about what Google's mobile first initiative means for your business, wirebuzz.com/133. I'm kind of feeling a little Paul Harvey today. And I don't know why, but I grew up listening to him a lot in my grandfather's car. And in a moment, you're going to hear the rest of the story. You see, Barry Schwartz also reported that Google has announced it has launched a new version of a structured data testing tool for rich results. I'll put this on the show notes page also. I'm not going to list off the long URL, but you're going to want to get access to it. Google also said it'll be calling rich snippets rich cards or enriched results. And from now on, you can group them all together. Rich snippets, rich cards, or enriched results will be called rich results. Those The reason I broke that down is for all you nerds out there that want to make sure you understand the right terms and the right ways to phrase it. Google said the new testing tool focuses on structured data types that are eligible to be shown in rich results. Now, the current tool only supports tests of recipes, jobs, movies, and courses. And Google said it'll be adding support for other rich results over time. Get access to that testing tool on the show notes page. I saw in Mashable, Facebook wants publishers to stop begging for likes. It isn't good. The social network is taking action against so-called engagement bait, where publishers ask users to vote, like, share a post in the hopes of bumping up their posts to the top of people's newsfeed. It's basically anytime you game the system, people don't like it. Doesn't matter if you're in an office and you game the overtime, or if you're a police officer and you're gaming the overtime system for your retirement in your last year to be able to get that last year check every year. And so you game the system. Well, Facebook's doing the same thing. It's taking action against so-called engagement bait, where publishers ask people to do things like vote, like, share. The posts aren't banned exactly, but Facebook will now demote those posts in the newsfeed. Facebook pages that repeatedly use these tactics will potentially get all of their posts demoted, the company announced on its blog Monday. That'll be on the show notes page. And the last thing you really want to do is get on the Zuckling's bad side, right? You want to play by the rules, and you want to proceed ahead. And in your head, you row, row, row your boat. And you do it gently down the stream. Silicon Beat says revelations that Uber conducted secret surveillance against competitors prompted the ride-hailing giant's top lawyer to issue a cease and desist order to security staff, according to a new report. Quote, and this is interesting. Check this out. Quote, to the extent anyone is working on any kind of competitive intelligence project that involves the surveillance of individuals, stop it now. Google's chief legal officer, Tony West, said in a message to his security colleagues, quote, we don't need to be following folks around in order to gain some competitive advantage. We're better than that. Well, you would think they would be, but businesses do it all the time. There was a news story that I saw yesterday. I posted it on social about how Apple got caught downgrading the performance of its older phones when it's about to release a new one. Dun, dun, dun. Like, who wouldn't have thought that was happening? And who didn't already notice that their battery would have to be charged four times a day, or the phone would have a hard time processing right around the time that Apple's about to introduce something new and improved? Who would have thought? All these companies find some competitive advantage, and I take very little comfort in Uber's chief legal officer saying to his colleagues, cut it out. You know, what often happens, and I'm not claiming in the Uber case, but in politics, when I covered politics, it would generally be a public-facing statement of cut it out. And then behind closed doors, the statement is proceed ahead. That's the expectations that I have in almost every scenario. Apple and Stanford are partnering on a new health study to collect heart rhythm data and potentially notify users who may have AFib, atrial fibrillation, a common cardiac disorder that makes the heart beat irregularly and have poor blood flow. AFib is the leading cause of stroke, and if it goes undiagnosed, and it leads to more than 130,000 deaths, 750,000 hospitalizations in the U.S. every year. Now, here's how this Apple Stanford app should work. The sensors collect blood flow from four points in the wrist, right? When you're wearing like your Apple Watch, and the heart rhythm is isolated from other blood flows and noises that use the artificial intelligence. Now, if the app detects abnormal heart rhythms, the app alerts the users and sets up a free consultation with a study doctor and an EKG patch for additional monitoring. Now, this is really cool. Coming out from Stanford School of Medicine, I'm particularly inspired by this. Why? Because I am an AFib patient. All right, 2008, I was doing an interview while I was working creating the first video medical encyclopedia on the internet. And in my 8,000 video interviews that I did for that enormous tool, in the middle of doing an interview about women and irregular heart rhythms, I recognized that every symptom the doctor was talking about in the interview were symptoms I have felt my entire life, but I never even noticed them or thought they were abnormal or had a conversation with the doctor about it or anything. But I started smuggling in questions into the interview that went like this. Doctor, if a woman's experiencing a fluttering in her chest, a regular heartbeat rhythm underneath her chin or even in her wrist area, what should she do? And the doctor looked at me and said, she should go see her doctor right away. And sure enough, the next morning when that doctor arrived to work, yours truly was sitting in his lobby. 2008, I had a heart procedure and everything's been great since. My rhythm has been fixed. My dancing has improved. Oh, and because I believe in the power of video, my wife went into the operating room during my procedure and filmed my procedure so we could educate patients about irregular heart rhythms. Pretty damn cool, right? And I looked at some point, and I was on medication and I looked over at the camera and the mic and I said to my wife holding the camera, what a true trained reporter would do. I said, hi, this is Todd Hartley reporting live from the operating room table. And then the medication kicked in and my voice went like this, reporting live from the table. Look, I want to tell you, and it was totally unusable, that part of it. I saw in ad news, 70% of users watch Instagram stories with the sound on while viewing. Now, they're increasingly expecting a video experience, and with more than 250 million people using Instagram stories each day, they expect to see more finesse in video storytelling from its medium. Brands that play around with audio in this format can also see wider audiences than traditionally expected. CNET is reporting platforms like Snapchat and Instagram have made recording and watching videos that are vertical more commonplace. But if you've ever played a vertical video on YouTube, two giant black bars fill most of the screen, and YouTube's latest update for iPhones changes that. On Tuesday, in a Twitter post, and this is kind of funny, check this out. On Tuesday, in a Twitter post, YouTube announced that the YouTube player for iOS will automatically adapt to the shape of the video you're watching. Dong, dong, dong. It's like, welcome to the future, YouTube. Should have been that way a long time. And for anybody that's still doing the black bars, it's time for you to evolve to a more native way for people to watch that content. I noticed in Android Police, by the way, before I read this news, have you ever heard of Android Police, the site? Me neither. Nowadays, websites are like opinions. Everybody's got one, right? Well, Google's data-friendly version of YouTube, which is called YouTube Go, has reached 10 million downloads today. Now, I told you about YouTube Go in past episodes when it was announced in September of 2016, when it was being rolled out gradually in India. YouTube Go is still only available in a few countries around the world, and we know India and Indonesia are on that list. So it's a major feat to see 10 million downloads from the Play Store in such a short amount of time without worldwide release. Now, I want to spend a few moments on this. I want to remind you about the business lesson that I gave you in September of 2016 when YouTube Go rolled out. The first thing is they did it because they, being YouTube, saw an emerging market of India with a billion people that need to get on the internet, but they really don't have effective 4G cellular data. So video really isn't a good option. It's kind of like what it was in the US when I started getting involved with video in 2003, where if you downloaded, you'd get buffering and it was annoying and it was a why bother, right? But because YouTube has such a vested interest in being the dominant platform, YouTube's created an app for these developing nations that allow you, if you live there, to download content you want to watch when you're on the go, hence YouTube Go, while you're at home on Wi-Fi and watch it later off of your device so you don't have to be reliant on inferior, you know, cellular connections. All right. That's the backstory there. And what they're really doing is they're planting their seed and they're saying, hey, India, we're here. We want to cater to your audiences, right? And we want to make sure that we're a viable tool for you and your families going forward. So we are going to kick the door in and create an app that's different than our dominant app. And good on them for doing it. Most of us don't trailblaze. We sit back. But the great opportunities in digital marketing are for early birds, and they get the worm almost each and every time. Now, here are the two things you need to know about YouTube Go. Look, I hate apps that have another name added to it, like Go, tacked onto the end. You know, this trend started with HBO Go, or Hobo Go, as we call it in my house, and it became trendy for websites and networks to name their Apple TV app or the Roku app differently than their existing platform, hence Fox Sports Go or Discovery Go or Bravo Now, right? Now, those types of branding additions for an existing brand are short-sighted. You see, it's short-sighted because, let's use HBO for example. If HBO was running an ad, they would say, if you want to get the latest episode of Ballers, go to HBO or download the HBO Go app, blah, 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 blah. So wordy, right? But super trendy. Eventually, this isn't a long-term branding decision. This is what you do when you're kicking in a door. And it's fine for YouTube Go because it's a different app for a different use than what you and I would use in the States. But for somebody like HBO, they may not need it. And eventually they're going to have to, and Bravo Now, Discovery Go, and Fox Sports Go. Eventually, it's just going to be Fox Sports. And you watch it on Apple TV or you watch it on your mobile device. We all know that eventually it's going to go there. HBO will have to phase that out. The reason YouTube Go was created is obvious. They needed to differentiate from the traditional YouTube app because YouTube Go was created so people in developing countries that don't have access to high-speed cellular 4G networks could download their desired videos and watch them later on. So I think it's interesting. Good on you, YouTube, for kicking in the door and being an early adopter with 1 billion people to be able to service. There's huge market opportunities there. What about your business? If your business is all web-based right now, what about a mobile-first device? If 58% of people are watching videos on their mobile device, it isn't going to be long before you should start catering to a majority of your audience as mobile-first. Google already knows that a vast majority of its daily searches come off of mobile device. I'm telling you, man, you should start being mobile first. And that's the big news that matters to video marketing masters. Quickly, let me give you an update and walk you back through the stories that we discussed today. I told you that 70% of ad agencies believe that video ads are more effective online than TV. That's pretty astonishing. I told you that 58% of all Q3 video views online came from mobile devices. Oh, that's a big deal. We also know that Barry Schwartz was in the news for a variety of things, which I'll get to in a moment. TechCrunch told you that Instagram is going to allow you to private message, direct message your own live video or what you're currently watching to friends or groups of friends. Facebook Live now has a built-in screen sharing function. Barry Schwartz told us about rich snippets and how it's changing from 160 characters to 320 characters. We talked about how Apple's creating a library of frequently asked questions, how Google has posted on the webmaster blog more advice around getting ready for the mobile-first index, and we also went into revelations that Uber's attorney told their staff to cut out tracking people. Sure, like that's ever going to happen. You know that Apple and Stanford have partnered on a new health study to collect data from the heart and irregular rhythms off of their Apple watches and to guide patients to making smarter decisions. And I gave you a clearer view on how I use video in my business to be more successful. Look, The whole goal is to help make you a better video marketer. And with each and every episode, I look forward to bringing you the latest news and information so you could be a very smart rock star marketer. If your business has problems that need to be solved, DM me. Not as a somebody who can be a client, but I'm willing to bet that most business problems can be solved with video. Really? I know it sounds strange, but I'm from the future. I also told you that platforms like Snapchat and Instagram have made recording and watching vertical videos commonplace. And now YouTube is going to be getting rid of those black bars that are on the outsides. Pretty interesting. Oh, and we talked about YouTube Go in developing nations. And I strongly encourage you to think way out of the box. If there's a developing opportunity for you, make sure that you start modifying towards it, right? And if we're already seeing that a vast majority of people are interacting on mobile devices, be mobile first. Big takeaway, check all of your videos on mobile through a small screen like the one in your back pocket before you push them live. Test in the native environment in which your majority of your audience is going to be looking at it. If this podcast was valuable to you, please do me a solid, share it with a friend, pay it forward, think abundantly, give that information out, and I will continue to bring you the latest information that matters to video marketing masters. And if you want to get my webinar, it's a video-based webinar on how to use video to accelerate your sales pipeline, and you'll also get to hear, oh God, I'm blushing already. My most embarrassing story will happen in the first minute or so. Go to wirebuzz.com/speedo. Yeah, I know. It's connected to my most embarrassing story. Wirebuzz.com/speedo is where you can get that. And if you want to know how to guarantee that your videos generate a return on investment, you know, ROI, well, I've created a 5-part web-based video mini course where I teach my secrets, and all you have to do to get access to it is go to wirebuzz.com/ROI, like return on investment. All right. And I will continue to put my head down to bring you the latest information. Follow me on LinkedIn. It's going down on LinkedIn. And I'll make sure to bring you information and little videos that I'm going to be posting throughout the week as I'm learning new things and new ways to use video, the most powerful tool on the internet to convince and convert prospects at accelerated rates. And that is this episode. The next one, I assume, is going to be me taking you in the car before and after the shoot that I did last night. It's a really interesting conversation, and I wish you all a very prosperous week. Bye for now. Talk to you soon. And the whole goal is to make you a video marketing master. Peace.